So we've got that happening. And I have known Anita just for a little while now, and I've been impressed with where, you know, where she's coming from with things. And I'm, you know, I'm happy to have her today with us and to share some things that I think that are going to be increasingly important as the world events proceed, as we see the things that, that have continued to happen with our economy, with some potential martial law type things, or at least some clampdowns and controls, things that may happen. There's no telling what may be sparked. We've got, it seems like an increase in natural disasters, whether it's earthquakes or storms or you name it, all sorts of things that are happening. So there are a lot of different fronts where we could find ourselves in kind of a real pinched situation for things that we need, like emergency supplies, food, water, you know, provisions, any of those things that we just take for granted every single day. So Anita is visiting with us today as our special guest to share with us some areas that are very dear to her heart and are very important in relation to what I was just discussing. And with that, I think what might be really good is to, I would say this. Maybe if you would, Anita, just give us a little bit of background on yourself and how you came around to be involved like you are today.
Okay, well, my name's Anita Untersee, and I have a company called Heartland Emergency, and my husband and I were in commercial film production for 20 years, and we're still involved, but doing documentaries on political issues. But after years in the business of film production and living in California, where I guess that's where you are, Earl, producing
yes.
magazine, Earthquake Country. We came back to Texas, which is where I am now. My husband and I were from here, and we started a homestead recently. We managed to get out in the country and start building our little piece of heaven, our homestead, and we are off-grid. We're not connected to the power grid, that is. I've got solar panels and a battery pack and inverters, and one inverter, I mean, a windmill for my water collection, and we're using kerosene right now at the house because, a long story, but and a wood-burning stove. Of course, Texas doesn't get so cold, but I've always been in a self-reliant frame of mind from having my own, my husband and I both having our own business and having to, you know, just figure out how to make things happen on our own. But now it seems even more critical with what's going on politically in the country and the world. And it seems pretty obvious that things are not going very well. And so I think it's important for people to be as self-reliant as possible. So that's where I'm coming from. And I also have a special guest that I hope to introduce if he's on with us yet, John Hopkins, who goes by the name of Hoppy, who is a survivor of a natural disaster. And I think he has a very important point of view. If he's on, that would be great. If he's not on yet, I guess he'll be on soon.
Yes, ma'am.
Is he in San Marcos by chance?
Oh, fine, you're on there. Okay. Yeah, John, do you want to tell a little bit about yourself?
Yes, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know. I was actually living on the Mississippi Gulf Coast when Hurricane Katrina came through on 29 August of 2005. And I probably at the time I'm sure I was more prepared than 99% of my neighbors. initially I had chosen not to stay. I was going to evacuate, was going to leave and get out because I lived 3/4 mile inland off the Gulf. Although I was 48 feet above sea level, I was pretty confident that I wouldn't flood. I know that's pretty close to be to the water, and when it's with a Category 5 storm coming in, which is what it was at that time. I, however, had some older neighbors, two elderly couples, one and a couple in their late 70s, one in their early 80s, and another lady who was a neighbor that was legally blind, and they refused to leave. And as some older people, you know, they don't want to leave their home, and they're scared to leave their home, and especially they stayed there through prior storms, they want to stay. And I was very reluctant to leave and leave them there because I was concerned about what would happen to them. So I chose to stay and went ahead and finished up the last of my preparations about 2 days before the storm. Anita heard me speak at a meeting sometime back, I said that I felt I was really prepared for myself and for the people who stayed with me. But what I was not prepared for was how overwhelmed I was going to become by the people who were not prepared. People who'd stayed and had very little provisions put back. I had neighbors that bought food that was perishable, and they were embarrassed to ask for anything. And after the storm, you know, I had one really close friend that got very sick from food poisoning. And, you know, here I was in the middle of trying to take care of dozens of people, many of whom I didn't know, that had survived the storm. And I had a real close friend that was deathly sick with food poisoning. And I was trying to care for him as well. And that was the thing that was probably the most overwhelming to me, was that I was not prepared for the influx of people who were going to come to me. And, you know, when you're the only guy in that part of the neighborhood that's got a generator and you've got a light on, they tend to come to you because they think you're the one that's probably got some provisions. I don't know how to describe people said I've done a good job of describing what it was like. But I don't know how to describe what it is like when you actually go through something like that and you see that much human suffering in such a small area. And there was a lot of death, there was a lot of destruction, and all that's very very moving when it happens to you. It's very earth-shattering, and at the time, you know, you're trying to pick up the pieces and take care of what you got. And I tell people that it's not the big, you know, Anita, what you're doing is a great thing for this food and with your business. And I think everybody needs to make sure they've got an adequate amount of non-perishable things put back in case something happens. But, you know, there's a lot of little things that people don't think about. You know, we had a generator, and I've kind of boasted a little bit about how prepared I was, but I must tell a story on myself. One of the things that I was not prepared for was the quantity of motor oil that my generator was going to use because of the demand that I put it under. And, you know, when you've got a big load on, they tend to use a little oil. I had not stockpiled motor oil. I had plenty of gasoline, but I did not stockpile motor oil. I was able to scavenge some from a garage that had been destroyed a couple blocks from my house, and we actually drained some from a vehicle that was parked in the driveway, and we were able to continue on. But, you know, without oil, the generator would have been pretty useless. And I don't know... A lot of people, I guess, think because if they don't live in a hurricane area, they don't need to prepare. But I would tell people that to be very careful about that line of thinking, because as you all have talked about earlier, there are a lot of things going on in the world today, and I'm very very concerned about a terrorist attack on the power grid, about a terrorist attack on the bridges over if they would bomb multiple bridges like over the Mississippi River, what it would do to the power grid and to transportation. I'm concerned about if another earthquake would hit in the Midwest. And for those of you who are not familiar with the New Madrid Fault, there was a tremendous earthquake there about 200 years ago, and the geologists tell us they've happened every 200, 250 years for centuries. If one like that would hit again, everything they estimate that every bridge from the Iowa-Missouri line to somewhere down around Louisiana would fall into the Mississippi River, and that would be terribly disruptive. And so I would tell everybody that you have to be prepared for these types of things to happen, because you may not have the warning like we had with the storm. You know, we were lucky in the sense that we knew the storm was coming. These other things, if they happen, you're not going to be prepared. They're going to be very sudden. And I don't know, Nita, if there's anything else you'd like for me to go over. You know my whole story, and I don't want to monopolize all the time here, but if there's anything else you'd like me to expound on, I'd be happy to share with you anything else.
Well, as far as what supplies do you think are the most critical things to have?
Well, the most critical things to have is definitely non-perishable food and drinkable water, or at least a way to sanitize, if I'm using the correct word, the water. I keep an adequate supply of unscented bleach around all the time. That's not the most palatable kind, but it'll sure keep you from drinking bad water. There's also the filtration devices that are available out there. I don't claim to be an expert on any of these. I'd tell people consult an expert, when you're preparing, someone who really, really knows the types of things that are most beneficial. The other things are medical supplies. Always make sure you've got plenty of your prescription medications in supply that you need, and also non-prescription medications. Anita heard me tell the story about I sutured a lady with veterinary supplies that I'd had left over from my days of having livestock, and I'm pretty good at it. My veterinarian had schooled me in suturing livestock back when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and it came in handy because, sometimes when these things happen, this was the case on the Gulf Coast, every hospital on the Gulf Coast was closed. You could not have a condition that was bad enough that they would open the doors for you. They were closed down. And if you could have even been able to get there. And so medical supplies, food and water, a generator, gasoline, motor oil, those are the things that are absolutely inherent that you have. And you need to have a plan. You need to have a plan put together about what you're going to do if something does happen, in case your family members are separated. But those are the very basics. Those are the very, very basic things. There are a lot of other things that you need to do to prepare. Make sure your cell phone has text messaging. Because if the telephone towers go down, it takes a whole lot less signal to send out a text message than it does to get a call out.
Mm-hmm. Earl, did you have any questions for Hoppy?
Well, I'm just wondering, I would guess that you probably, I know what you've told us may be a mild version of your experience with that, but there's probably a lot that you saw that wasn't the most pleasant thing.
Yeah, there were some very unpleasant things, and some of them are, as I told Anita when we first met, a lot of these things are things that, 5 years later, I've just started to talk about, because some of them were so troubling. When we walk down to the beach the next morning, and when you see, people that have drowned in the storm surge and they're washing up on the beach, the ocean has a lot of creatures, and they don't discriminate on what they try to eat, and that's a terrible thing to have to see. And we tried to do what we could to take care of those poor souls. And the other thing is that, and I should have mentioned this when Anita asked me the previous question, is that you have to be prepared. I can tell you this from experience from several days after the storm. You have to be prepared to defend yourself. You have to be armed. You have to know how to use the weapons that you arm yourself with. I'm not going to suggest any particular type of method to use, because everybody's got their own preference. But I can tell you that you have to be prepared, because there's the thing I think that I can say that in a gist is that I saw the very, very best come out in people after that tragedy, and I saw some of the very worst come out. And you cannot rely on the police. The police will not be there when there's a major disaster. Most of them are trying to take care of themselves. They came and told us, you made the choice to stay here. Now you've got to make the choice to take care of yourself. And you've got to make the choice to defend yourself. And, you're in charge now. There's no phone system. There's no 911. We're not coming. And
how
that
long
was,
did it take until someone, so you had any help? Quite a while.
We started getting some help within a few days after the storm by the National Guard. And, everybody knows FEMA's reaction was. Of course, there was a two-pronged tragedy. There was what went on in New Orleans, and there was what went on in Mississippi, and there was a Lake Pontchartrain separating us, so it was, and the bridges had gone down. So it was very difficult for them to link those two efforts together. There was two efforts going on, but we actually didn't have any water or power or sewer for, you know, a couple of weeks. Some areas got it back within a few days, depending on, you know, how bad they were damaged and where they were. But as far as getting help, you know, there was basic food and water supplies that started coming in distribution centers after within the first several days, but they were running out before they could get everybody taken care of. And so many of the people that were elderly or infirmed or disabled, you know, in Mississippi in August it was 97 degrees, and those types of people were not able pardon me to stand in line for 2 to 3 hours to wait on food and water in 97 degree heat. It just, they wouldn't have made it. And so I would tell people, don't plan on that being there, because it may or may not come. We were lucky enough, because of where we were, we had two military bases close by, one of which was a Navy CB base, and they had a lot of heavy equipment, and they literally took the bulldozers and ran them down the roads to push the debris out of the way so that the National Guard could get in. But as far as law enforcement protection, there wasn't any for a few weeks.
Wow.
That's really something. Well, you know, John, I wanted to say that we, and Anita, we've got actually one person holding on the line to ask a question, and a couple of questions that have come in over the internet. If you don't mind, I'm not sure, they're probably going to be for John. If you can stay on a little bit longer with us, John.
Sure, I can stay on a little longer.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay, I'm going to unmute the line. There's someone from Harlingen, Texas, ends in 3171. Are you there, guest?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay.
How you doing?
Go ahead. Great.
Yes, sir. Well, I've always wanted to have my own well down where I live at. It's hard to, it's about $5,000, and I just don't have to have it dug on my own electricity. I always wanted solar, can't get that. Now, I've heard, I'm not sure, that bleach will sanitize water. Somebody told me a teaspoon. I've heard 8 drops per gallon. I know ammunition, stuff like that there, and I've seen what actually went around to de-arm some of the people in New Orleans. You know, you got to worry about, even if you do have the weapons, protect yourself when they come take your weapons from you, you're still stuck in the cold. What about the bleach? Is there a certain measurement, any standards I could go by?
Off the top of my head, I can't recall the exact ratio you're supposed to use. I know there's a few drops to a gallon you're supposed to use the unscented bleach. That information is available on the internet. And
it is.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I don't have that answer for you. I'm going to be reluctant to throw a number out there. I've got one popping in my head, but I'm going to be reluctant to throw it out there because I don't want to rely on my memory. But what I do is I've got all that stuff written down at home, and I've got a file that's got all that information. It's also got you know, the capacities of my generator and the different things that I may need, and so that if something ever happens and I'm going, okay, what do I need? What am I supposed to do? What spark plug do I need to replace in this particular? I've got
well,
all
here's
that.
Here's something else for you then. Now I've gotten I've been seeing this coming. I've been preparing. I live close to Mexico, so I've been going over to buy penicillin. I got a bunch of first aid kits I bought. You know, stuff to clean wounds with. The one thing I can't seem to get is some real big painkillers. I know because in case somebody's really hurt or in pain, what would you can't get the like Oxycontin or the stuff that, you know, drug addicts like, but the stuff that really works. What would be a good second best that we could probably buy legally?
Well, I would tell you that I'm no expert on the laws concerning medication. I know that there are a lot of online sources out there where you can buy antibiotics and things of that nature. You can Google that and find those. However, the painkillers, most of those are considered narcotics. And if you're in possession of those without a prescription, to the best of my understanding, you're in violation of federal law. But, you know, you are close to Mexico, and I'm in Texas as well myself now, back here after the storm. Some of that stuff is available in Mexico, but I think if you're from Texas, you probably know what you got to do to get that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've got most of it. You can go over there and buy it over the counter, penicillin, all that stuff over there. Because I live down there, we shop over there a lot. And,
yeah, so your potential problem just runs in when you come back across the border if you're in possession of it without a prescription.
Yeah, you have to, you know, they allow you to bring certain things back, like, but you can only bring certain quantities back. I mean, they start taxing you on it, or.
Yes, sir. Yes.
There might have been somebody out there, this Haiti deal, and I really don't like to say this, but I've seen something scary on the internet right there where they actually come close to predicting Haiti's earthquake before it happened, way before it happened. If you got a fence on paper, you might want to look at this, and I'll tell you how to find it. If anybody's interested, no, I'll just hold it to myself.
Well,
no,
go ahead.
Say again?
What was that?
On YouTube. You got your pencil and paper ready because it's long. Antichrist. Obama. New World Order. Agenda 2012 exposed. This guy showed dog lines on his video. From New York City's World Trade Center, right through Shanksville, right to Oklahoma City bombing, right straight line, right to where the shuttle Columbia came into Texas's atmosphere. Then he drew a line from the World Trade Center, right through the Pentagon, right to New Orleans, and he called it HARP technology that Jesse Ventura talked about.
Right.
Then he drew one from the Waco bombing right there, and it showed basically the compass and the square. And he was talking about some siege over Memphis, Tennessee, and he was drawing a line. He was predicting on this line he thought it was going to be Miami that was going to be hit. They're trying to draw pentagrams, what he's saying. But if you kept going from Miami, you went straight down there to Haiti, right to Port-au-Prince on the map, as far as I can tell with a ruler. That's scary.
Well, it is. But I think we need to stay on topic of what we need to do to prepare here. It's easy to get off on these discussions of all the stuff going on.
Agreed. Well, I appreciate that, guest. Any final question or anything, or was that pretty much it?
Well, I was just looking for a backup to what would work as a painkiller for injuries if you can't get a hold of prescription drugs. What's the strongest over-the-counter we could get?
I don't think either Hoppy or I are experts in that.
I'm not qualified to answer that question.
I'm not qualified either, but I did hear a woman talking about getting veterinary supplies that would work for people. But I don't know. I never checked it out myself, but it sounded pretty good to me. So.
All right. Thank you so much, guest. Have a good rest of the day. And we're going to go to a couple of questions that we've got. Online, let me just scroll over to where those are, and we'll see what's there. We've got John Jones in Ossining, New York. As a prepared person, I often wonder about how I will react when my neighbors knock on my door. I can't possibly prepare for all of them. What is your recommendation? I don't want them to get aggressive if I have to turn them away. You know, I want to be able to feed people, but it will reduce what I have for my own family. What do you guys say?
Well,
how did you handle it?
I don't know that there is a good answer for that. I did not turn anyone away. I said the first night after the storm, you know, I had about 17 people around there that I'd never seen before in my life. And, it was difficult. It was troubling. One lady was injured pretty badly, and I spent a lot of time taking care of her. You know, I don't want to get off track, I don't want to digress into another direction. But you know, I'm a Catholic and I'm a Christian, and my fundamental beliefs are that you know I'm supposed to lend assistance to my neighbor if I'm able, and. And that's just my own personal beliefs. I know some people, you know, are much more generous than I am, and some people may not be as inclined to be that way. And I'm not going to judge anyone, but myself, I couldn't turn anyone away. I tended to just put it in God's hands. I felt like He'd spared me during the storm, and I felt like that I had to do what I could to help people as much as I could at the time. And that was just I kind of just did what I could at the moment. And I don't know that that's the answer that you're looking for, but I don't know how to tell you an easier or gentle way that you would turn people away. I just don't know. In my heart, I wasn't able to.
Good answer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good question and good answer.
I guess in the moment, we'll have to, you know, whether it's through our spiritual connection that we pray, we use our intuitive ability, we just assess the situation and do what it feels right in our heart and mind and in all ways and act accordingly. And I think things will work out.
Well, not to digress, but the story of fishes and loaves comes to mind with that answer by Hoppy, because Jesus multiplied, you know, the fishes and loaves to take care of everybody. And I don't, it sounded, well, you're still alive, Hoppy, and you shared what you had. So,
by the grace of God.
Yeah. Wow. So any other questions that are a little easier to answer?
Yeah, we've got... And, you know, probably just on that particular point, it probably depends on how long the disaster is going to be, you know, before there's some relief and things are returning a little bit more to normal. If it's extremely extended, some people are just not going to make it because there won't be enough to go around, I would think, unless there's a miracle, which can happen. Anyway, right. So much on that. Sherry in Louisville says, I am quite concerned about what John is talking about right now. She typed this earlier, I'm sure. It is hard enough to prepare for my own family and think of what we might need and prepare for every eventuality. It seems almost overwhelming to consider storing enough for so many people that will be in need who have not prepared. What do you suggest as a reasonable approach to this problem?
Another easy question.
back to the same answer,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah,
you just
I really got to answer it the way I did before. I actually ended up with a lot more food and supplies than even I had prepared for, because several of my neighbors, as they were evacuating, gave me their perishable foods, and I froze some of the stuff up in my deep freeze, and some of it I kept and we used it a little quicker. Matter of fact, I even had some neighbors that left me their keys and said, you know, if there's anything you need, you know, we've got all these canned goods inside, and you can go in and help yourself. And, you know, after several days, you know, we did start getting some help. We did start getting some food there. So we had enough to last us, you know, for the first few days. I can tell you that in a widespread disaster that's prolonged, I don't know that that would be the case. So I don't know that you could ever be completely prepared for every single possible potential thing that could happen, because there's whatever you could possibly imagine, there's always seems to be something more. But I really don't have a pat answer for that. It is overwhelming, and it just I didn't react the way I thought I would. I didn't do the things I thought I would. And I don't know that I'd do things again the same way. But I know that it's difficult. And at the time, you're so busy that you just do what you have to do at the time, I guess. This is the best way to. But I don't know how to tell you to prepare for people in your area. A lot of it's going to. Every area is different. You know, Anita, where you live is going to be completely different than where the lady that posed the question is.
All right. Well, I put myself out in the country, out in the middle of nowhere, so I think I'll get my family and friends that know where I am, they'll be there, and I try to stock up enough, as much as I can, extra, because I know even though my own family is aware of all the situations out there, they're just too busy living their life to prepare. Or maybe they're too young. I don't know what it is. They just don't think it'll happen to them. So anyway,
certainly. Okay.
Has a limited amount of time here, so was there anything that anybody else wanted to ask him before we move on?
Let's see if anything. A couple of little interesting things here. One, James in Salt Lake City says, answer to good painkiller, whiskey. I thought that was kind of interesting. Could be. And that's legal to get. You can get a hold of that. Anyway, I guess that's self-explanatory. We have Sherry in Louisville saying, I'm a Christian as well, but if it's a more widespread problem, i.e. not a localized disaster, it won't be practical to help everyone, in which case no one will survive. This is the problem I want to consider. Please note the story of the 10 wise and the 10 foolish virgins. Any comments on that?
Yeah, the ten virgins didn't share, the five of them didn't share the oil they had with the other five. The five that didn't get the oil, you know, missed all the fun or something to that effect. They missed the bridegroom. I think you all probably know this story better than me, but that's just... So they all didn't share. They got their name in the Bible, so I guess there's more than one way to look at it.
Okay. Well, with that, I guess it was there a final thought that you want to share with us, John or Hoppy? I know you go by Hoppy, I believe, right?
That's fine. I would just tell everybody to do some research. Think about the things that can possibly happen, and you don't have to do it at a furious pace, because it is overwhelming to try to prepare all at once. It can be expensive. And you might want to try to do it over a period of time. Put back the things you need. One of the things I talked about at the meeting I spoke at was, you know, if you store gasoline, make sure that you buy some stabilizer for it, because gasoline gets old. A lot of people don't realize that. And just go over your plan. Put together a plan, and then gradually start implementing it till you've got it in place. And, always try to be prepared. Always try to be prepared. And there may be something you miss. I guess the thing I'd leave you with is that when something bad happens, I remember the words of my granddad years ago. He said, you know, when things get bad, the worst thing you can do is panic.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep your head. You've got to keep your cool. And you can't panic. And just having that plan will help that.
Yeah. Then you'll at least have that much going for you. You won't have to give it a thought. You'll know where your food is. You'll know where your water is and your first aid.
Exactly.
And you'll it just makes it a lot simple if you don't have to figure out those basic things to keep yourself alive.
Right. And I appreciate you all for having me today. I really do. I appreciate the opportunity to share the story, because I hope it helps some people out there understand the importance of being prepared. Not only to take care of yourself, but defend yourself. I'd love to have had a situation where I could have spent more time with you all today. As I told Anita, I've got a couple of employees, and one of them's gone on vacation, and the other one's deathly sick with the flu. And I'm trying to hold down the fort here by myself today, so that put me a little short on time.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate your valuable time.
Thank you so much. If I can ever visit with you again, please feel free to ask.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, and we have, Anita, I realize that I have a bio on you, and I really apologize for not sharing that, and I just want to take a second here and share that if I might. Anita Undersea is the owner of Heartland Emergency, a long-term storable food company specializing in freeze-dried food, the ultimate storable food with an incredible 30-year shelf life. She is the frequent guest on the Power Hour, I believe that's with Joyce Riley, and other radio shows, and she's a political activist. After nearly 20 years in L.A., Los Angeles, working in commercial film production, Anita and her husband returned to their roots and moved to their country retreat outside of Austin, Texas. They are off-grid with a solar system, wood-burning stove, and windmill. Wow. I'm envious. Being self-reliant is a top priority for them. This spring, they're planting their first herb and heirloom vegetable garden. They are also in production on a documentary about the current political situation and look forward to a spring release date. So that's great. I'm glad that I got a chance to go ahead and share that. I was going to ask you the question before about what are some reasons to prepare for an emergency, and we've hit on certainly some of it, but there's more than that. What else can you tell us, Anita, about that?
One of the things about Hoppy is his emergency was a natural disaster, and, of course, we're seeing it in Haiti, and it happens all over the world, natural disasters, but economic collapse is a big one. there was discussion today about how many trillions of dollars were stolen from us. I can't remember the number, but it's it's mind-boggling. And there's cyber terrorism, and then there's bioterrorism, which I heard through a mainstream media source that our beloved president is going to discuss an anthrax attack, a possible anthrax attack. And whenever I hear that the government is going to, you know, help us on those things, it makes me wary of, you know, why do they think there's going to be an anthrax attack? And, you know, they're developing a vaccine for it or something like that. So they've got the problem and the solution. So those are a couple of things. A nuclear event, I mean, that's been on the horizon. Since I was a kid, we were worried about the Russians, but now we're worried about everybody else, I guess. Pandemics, we went through a lot of that fear this fall, and I hate to even think about all these things. There could be one or even more than one happen at the same time, and obviously, natural disasters, you know, everybody knows they happen, and even from the smallest event, it's a three-day power outage or an ice storm or something like that, all the way up to some of these bigger total social collapse scenarios. I have people who buy food from me for everything from, you know, the smallest week, you know, 3 day to a week event to a year or 2 years or more that are people maybe like myself who are out in the country and trying to be as self-sufficient as possible to just so we have the freedom to decide if we want government help or not. So that's kind of my point of view on the different emergencies that could happen.
Okay. Yeah, so many of us have been in a lot of the webinars we've had to discuss the possibility of martial law or other action, whether it's more localized or whether it's just complete, you know, throughout the U.S. or if it's some extra layer or step of control that's kind of gradual, whatever it may be. But there are just so many things that can actually happen that are either manufactured or assisted, or if they're just, like you said, something that just occurs naturally in the course of things. Well, how does self-reliance play into the idea of preparedness?
Well, we've touched on that a little bit, and I think Hoppe didn't give himself enough credit for how prepared he really was. I think because he was raised on a ranch, people who were raised in the country kind of have a you know, sixth sense about being ready, and people of an older generation always put food back. They grew their own food, and they put it back. They put back their garden's bounty, and they had it to get them through the winter. It was just a state of mind, and that's the way I believe that our country was founded on that. But more and more, we've kind of slipped as a society into this idea that we're going to be taken care of by someone else, our government. And I like to tune out of that. I don't have a television, and I just try to use my own brain instead of what's fed into it by everybody else. And so maybe it's kind of simple, it probably is, but I think it's just a different state of mind to plan on taking care of yourself. Before we started the webcast, I was talking to one of the people listening. He's a trucker, and I feel like a lot of the guys out there driving trucks and women, they know how to do things. They know how to fix things. They got tools. They can figure out how to take care of themselves, most likely. So we need more of that kind of individual, I think, to just help us get through these type of situations.
Certainly. Well, I know we've mentioned a number of things, and certainly everyone knows, food and water are just crucial. They're the ones that everybody thinks of immediately. But, you know, I'm sure there's some other important things, maybe some that you could mention that just trigger people to realize the importance of focusing on some other areas too. What are some other things we should be aware of?
Well, I made a list of the 10 most important things that I could think of, and if anyone wants that list, I can send it to them. Just call me or go on my website and send me an email, and I'll send it out to you.
Well, great. If you would give out that contact information, because that's wonderful. You're offering that. You're offering it free to anyone that requests it of you. Either calls in or goes to your website or emails you. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I've got the 10 critical steps to preparedness, and my phone number is 830-431-1776, and my website is www.heartlandemergency.com. And so, again, my phone is 830-431-1776. And what I specialize in is food storage, primarily freeze-dried food, because it's a food that you can put aside and not have to worry about it. Again, it won't go bad. It's got a 30-year shelf life, and it won't. Even though I can food in glass jars myself, one little earthquake or you know, somebody knocks a shelf down, and your food supply is wiped out. So, and freezer, same thing. Your freezer can get unplugged, or power can go down, then you lose a whole freezer full of food. So that's why the freeze-dried food, which is comes in a large can, and it's kind of a powdery form of food that you add water to reconstitute it. That kind of food, you're not gonna have to worry about it. You put it aside, and you're not gonna have to think about it again. And I still think you should have the other foods too. But anyway, I got off the track. Besides food and water, which water's a little bit tough because it takes up a lot of room to store. 1 gallon per person per day is the rule of thumb, and that's for drinking. And then you need more for washing and for your pets and that. But you can still, even though it's a daunting task, you can still get 5 gallon containers, not any heavier than that, because they're going to be too heavy to move around. And just fill up a bunch of them and have them out of the sun. And you're supposed to change them out every 6 months. But that's one way to store water. So food, water, a cook stove would be really nice if you were in a situation where your power was off and propane was out and, you know, had no way to cook. It would be very comforting to have hot food, although you don't have to have it. In the cold weather, a non-electric heater, kerosene. I have a couple kerosene heaters, and a propane heater also. Lighters and matches, very important, because you're going to need to be lighting fires and things. So those are some things. First aid and extra medications. I personally managed to store up a year's worth of prescription medication. I don't have to take too much, luckily, but you can store up, although your insurance won't pay for it if you're storing more than 30 days at a time usually, but I don't want to have to worry about needing to get anything, so I keep all those on hand, and I'm working on my first aid kit, so I don't have all the answers on what to put in a first aid kit, but and then another item which would be helpful would be radio, either a battery or hand crank radio, lots of extra batteries. And I think Hoppy mentioned this, but something I didn't realize is that in an emergency, if the cell phones, all the cell lines are jammed up and you can't you know, you're trying to reach your family and tell them you're okay or something like that, and you can't get out, send a text message, and those text messages store up in the big towers, and they stay there until they're actually sent, where the cell phone call itself will just, it'll just go busy and you have to keep dialing it, but the text messages will be the first thing to get out. So that's a little tip I came across and thought was handy.
Great. Well, it sounds like a lot of it too is if one would think about a situation where, like you said, there may be no power. So anything that you would depend on using that would require electricity, now you've got to have an alternative for those functions, those supplies, as whatever it may be. If you couldn't go to a store because the local store is either destroyed or empty, there's nowhere to buy anything, there's nothing available to get hold of. One other thing I can think of, too, is anything that you can barter, that if you have collected something, whether it's like small bills, you know, money, or whether it's you've got some silver coins or silver, gold, whatever, anything that you can trade out to someone for something if they did have it. Of course, a lot of people may be in a similar situation where they don't have a lot of something, but if they did and you had the ability to trade something of value for it, then that would be helpful. But I think the safest thing is to be self-sufficient within yourself and have all that you need, not depend on thinking that it'll come from others.
The money is actually on the list. I didn't finish going through the list, but money.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's okay. Money and small bills is a good idea. I think it's pretty hard to do this, but I'm going to tell everybody else to do it, and I don't think I can. But to keep $250 per person or whatever you can afford, okay, in small bills at your house, hidden in different places or at your location. If you're in a truck, I guess hide it in different places in your truck. But I don't know if I'm disciplined enough to keep that money around and not go spend it on something. But if the ATMs are down and the banks are closed and everything's shut down, that's it for getting cash. So I think that the small bills is critical because stores are not going to accept checks, and they're not going to be giving change. So that's one thing. The other, I guess, maybe most critical thing is this self-protection that Hoppy was talking about. And women, too, need to know how to handle themselves and a weapon so they can take care of themselves. You're going to feel a lot more empowered if you know how to handle a gun. And we're in Texas, so we're allowed to.
Yeah. Well, it seems, you know, some people shrink back from that, but just think of how desperate people can be. Think of how desperate anyone would be. They're not in their right mind when they and their loved ones are starving.
Right.
Or if they don't get some water soon, they're going to die, or the food or whatever, they don't. You know, they're just desperate. They turn into animals, and it's just, you know, you've got to be sure that you're able to protect yourself and your loved ones.
Yeah.
It becomes quite animalistic and savage then, but, hey, you know, it those things happen. We've seen it in other situations. I mean, look at what happened in Haiti.
Sure. He made it clear that it was very important to him to be able to take care of himself and the people he was trying to care for, that he
mm-hmm.
was armed and ready to just protect what he had. So,
yeah. And that includes good people that have to do that for themselves.
Right. And then other items that you need that you might not think about are soap, trash bags, toilet paper, Clorox, paper plates, cups and utensils are helpful, hand can openers and hand corkscrew, you know, whatever. then there's infants and seniors. So you need to think about their special needs, diapers, formula, their medications, storing extra pet food. And then I think what Hoppy also said was having a plan should maybe go top of the list, which is just for everybody to know where the family could meet or where they could contact each other, have a out-of-state contact that you can call in case all the local lines are down, but maybe you can get out a long-distance call if everybody has an agreed-upon contact call. It makes it a little bit easier.
Yes.
So there is a lot to think about, but I think if you just jump in and take some baby steps and start by storing some extra food, even just regular canned food when you go to the grocery store, start picking up extras. They have a 2-year shelf life, most of them, 18 months, 2 years. Have extra of those, put the new ones in the back and get the old ones toward the front, and as you use them, just keep, you know, storing extra. And that'll at least make you feel like you're doing something. You will be doing something.
Yes. Well, I think sometimes people think it's such a gargantuan job to do that they just don't even start. But if you just do a little bit, just think of something, I'll do this one thing, and then do another thing, and over time you'll go, wow, I've really done a lot. I've got a lot of things together.
Yeah.
So it's not all or none. You don't have to do it all at once or do nothing. Just do at least a little. John in Ossining, New York, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but anyway, he says, just remember that if things get bad, including money and economy issues, the dollar won't be worth much to anyone. Silver, gold, cigarettes, and whiskey are perfectly acceptable barter.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
I think he's absolutely right, and I think buying barter items is a great idea right now. You know, I would be hard-pressed to want to barter up any of my food, my freeze-dried food or any food, but I probably could let loose of some things like that or any other items. You know, if you have massive quantities of toilet paper, then you can afford to trade it out. And if nobody else has it, then it's going to become very important, even something like paper towels or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I can see people, you know, who are really in dire needs, and paper money, I can't eat it. I can't use it for what my urgent needs are. Well, I don't need that now. I need these other things. So, there will be people who will though. I mean, and it just depends on how well prepared people are. I would say the bulk of the people, unless things really turn, if anything comes down soon, I don't know if there are going to be a high percentage of people that are much prepared at all. There'd be some people that have been seeing this for a long time that'd be very well prepared, and then others that just have done, you know, a few things here and there. As the way I think it's probably is, at least it sits right now.
right.
I was gonna, let's see. You pretty much completed the items you're gonna mention to be prepared with, right?
Yeah, I think those are the main things to have. You can go into a lot more detail, but I think those are the best ones to have.
And people may really want to take advantage of that list, so, you know, they'll certainly call in or, you know, request the list, and it will be provided. I think it'd be good for us to talk about freeze-dried food, since it's the easiest way to store food. Just so we'll know, we're on the same page with it. What is freeze-dried food, and how does it compare to other stored foods?
Well, freeze-drying doesn't have a very good, you might say, a sexy name, because freeze-drying doesn't sound that good. But it's a very high-tech way to preserve food. So it's similar to frozen food, except you don't have to freeze it. It's already been done for you. It's a scientific process that rapidly freezes the fresh food and removes up to 99% of the water content in order to preserve the structure of the food. So it is very vegetables and the fruits are picked fresh right at the height of their harvest time and immediately subjected to the technique of freeze drying, so they're as fresh as you can get them, and then all the water is taken out of them to preserve them. So then it turns the food into a powdered substance that you just add water to, hot water, preferably boiling water, and let it sit for about 5 minutes, and then it's ready to eat, and it turns back into the original food that it was, same nuclear structure, same color, same taste. It's an incredible technique. It was developed for NASA, so they wanted a very lightweight food to take into space, and this is what they came up with. Campers and backpackers have been using the freeze-dried food for years and years, and now people who are interested in storing food for their family are buying it in case quantities, which is the way we sell it at Heartland Emergency.
And what is a case?
A case consists of 6 number 10 cans. They're the large cans that are about the size of a coffee can, a large coffee can or a gallon of paint. And they're sealed, and then they have a plastic lid that comes with it. So you can open the can and scoop out what you want and then put this plastic lid back on, and it'll still sit on the shelf. No refrigeration would be required, and it will last unopened. They'll last up 30 years or longer, and opened, once you've opened a can, it's about a month to 2 months. We also offer free shipping to the lower 48 states, and there's no tax on any of our items. So the prices that you see on my website, or if you call me for information, I'll mail it to you. A lot of people aren't on the Internet, don't want to be, so I can mail you information as well. Just call me at 830-431-1776, and I'll get that out to you.
Great. Okay, and tell us as far as how's the best way to store freeze-dry food?
Well, like any food that you're storing, you want to try to keep moisture away from it, and preferably a consistent temperature, not too hot, not too cold. But it's very compact. You can fit it in a basement. It's great, but a lot of people don't have basements, so in a closet would be fine. A case is about 12 inches by 18 inches by 8 inches, so it's not that big, and you can store quite a bit in a 4 by 2 by 2 space. You can get 20, 30 cases.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the types of meals that you have.
Well, that's the other great thing about the freeze-dried food is when Hoppy was talking about the tragedy that he lived through, I could tell that, you know, going in the kitchen and cooking a meal was not something he had time to do, or anyone did. And so these foods are already ready to go, and the types of foods are things that most people like to eat, spaghetti and meat sauce, chicken and rice, granola with milk and blueberries, chicken teriyaki. There's 19 different prepared entrees. There's also meats that are real meats, not the textured vegetable protein meats that are soy-based. So real meats, I've got cooked diced beef, cooked diced chicken, cooked ground beef, and real vegetables and real fruits. So if somebody that wanted to have a stock their pantry, I would think about getting the meats and vegetables, because those are the type of things that are going to be hard to come by in an emergency situation.
Certainly. Well, I want to remind everyone that we're speaking with Anita Untesi with Heartland Emergency. And, of course, we had Hoppy on earlier, and there's some really important information that could be absolutely vital in light of developments that where things may go. And I know we've been on close to an hour, and we're drawing, you know, near the end of our webinar. But if anyone does have a question or just a very brief comment, if you'd like to ask a question of Anita, then hit *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll unmute your line. Or if you're online, just type the question in the question box and submit that to us, and we'll make sure the question gets answered. I just want to ask you, Anita, one other thing that came to mind. What are the freeze-dried pantry essentials?
Well, I kind of went over this a little bit earlier, and that would be the 100% real meat. I think in a survival situation, protein is critical for just keeping going, and you burn a lot of calories when you're in a stressful situation. So the meats are very important, and you can buy other companies have what they call meat, but they're textured vegetable protein. They're not real meat. They're a soybean-based meat, and so I recommend the real meat, real vegetables, real fruits, and then that way you could combine them with other things that you've got stored. If you're storing rice and beans, those are all good things to have and should have. You can combine them, and then you'll have something that's filling and nutritious at the same time. So those are the most important things I think you should have, and I hope everybody will think about this, and feel free to look at the website and call me. I have some special variety cases, which I don't have posted yet on the site. But the site is www.heartlandemergency.com. And my phone is 830-431-1776.
And so that people will know, I'm just going to go ahead and spell that out, because some people come up with different spellings for Heartland. But it's HEARTLANDEMERGENCY.com. And I think that was very good that you offer for anyone that calls in to get that 10 critical steps to emergency preparedness. That may be worth its weight in gold as far as knowledge and information that you need to have available. And I believe that you had mentioned, Anita, also that you are offering a free initial consultations to people to get full information about the types of things that you've touched on today, and right, looking ahead towards preparing. So that's great. We do have one guest. Do you have a few more moments to?
I do.
I've got a guest. In fact, this may have been the guest that was on before. Let me go ahead and unmute the line. And they're in Arlington, Texas. Are you there, guest?
Yes, sir. I sure still am.
All right.
I'm still here.
Did you have another?
Yes, sir. I do.
I'm
very interested in what she's got right there. I didn't get a chance to find out how much she's running for. I didn't know she was associated with the Power Hour. I've seen one of the documentaries. How much these cases run, if you don't mind me asking, are they affordable?
Well, they run around starting at $125 to about $200, depending on what you choose. Spaghetti and sauce is around $134, and it varies like that. So you get 60 servings in most of the cases. So it's around $2 to $3 per serving.
That's not bad. I remember you said something about that you had solar power at your house. I've always been interested in it. Is there any way if I emailed you, could you hook me up and tell me who does that? Nobody seems to want to give you any straight answers. And the best I can find is a solar power generator on InfoWars, and that's expensive.
Yeah, solar power is expensive. The panels are expensive. The batteries are expensive. The inverter is. It's all kind of.
In the long run, I believe it would pay for itself. It's just getting.
I hope so. I think that's true. I may be passing it on to my kids at this point. But yeah, so we have four panels, and but I saw in Mother Earth News had a article on solar energy recently, and their house had 18 panels, and that would be great. But they had everything in their house; they were running a full on house, and we are.
Yeah, I am too, because I put everything electric. It's always been my dream to have my own water, which is it's expensive to get a well down there where I live at. I live in South Texas, down in my Brownsville.
Yeah.
And I wanted my own. That makes me independent right there, my own energy. That's why I had electric stoves, had everything electric. Sensual air put in. Everything's electric because I wanted one day to go with solar panels, and that would be electric. And
yeah.
I thought ahead of time right there, and I just didn't have the money for the solar.
You could sell back your power, too, through the power grid. And I don't know all the detail on that because I don't do it, but you could.
You will be hearing from me. I want to send you I want to go to your website, and I want to start buying some here and there, a couple cases here, a couple cases there. I've been slowly preparing. I'm probably one of the guys that's in the middle he was talking about, and y'all cross your fingers for me. I got family members, and I've stocked up on a lot of stuff. I believe in self-defense and owning weapons, and I got a street where I have a lot of good people. I've talked to you down that street right there, and I kind of get them to what's going on. And I got a feeling my house will be a central hub like his if nothing else. And I will use the pitching system. You know, everybody pitches in, everybody works, and everybody survives.
Yeah, that's right.
That's great. Well, Guest, I did want to mention that there is an individual that was on one of our past webinars that does exactly that. He's done for decades installing solar, and he knows everything about it. Terrific guy. His name is Ed Knott. Ed Knott. Do you have a way to write down the phone number if I give it to you?
Yeah, I'm parked at a truck stop right now. I'm going to go get some dinner. Ed, E-D-D?
Yeah, E-D and then K-N-O-T-T. And,
K-N-O-T-T, Ed Knott.
And his phone number is 518-857-9455.
Maybe he'll know some ins and outs. I know the government supplements it somehow or another. They probably won't give us a lot, but I'm like, I have electric stove. I got everything in my house is electric. I've even put in a reverse osmosis system, a salt tank to treat the water coming in, as I have city water. And maybe he can show me where, how, and if there's any way, any government programs out there, he can teach me into that, too, and I will call him, too, sir.
Sure.
Yeah,
okay, great.
Well, Ed, he's probably the expert. He is the expert more than I am.
Great. Well, thanks so much, and good luck with your adventure of getting all that put together.
I'm trying.
Anything else? Okay, and let me just check real quick to see if we have any final internet questions, and looks like we're caught up on those. What I would say, Anita, if you would, I'm going to announce a couple of things, and then while I'm doing that, if you would just think if there's anything that maybe you had wanted to mention and didn't, or if you want to just leave us with a final thought, then we'll do that in just a moment. And I just want to let everybody know that we will have this, since it's being recorded, it will be posted shortly at the end of this webinar, and you can go and access it, and we invite you to share it with others, and as well as take part in the other offerings there of different webinars that we've done in the past on so many topics that are important to folks like us. And we invite you to join us again tomorrow when we have Sue Barrow, and she's going to be talking about some very important areas about how to gain more freedom, how to create more prosperity, and how to gain your power back. And she's going to talk about something called Liberty Wealth Club and the wealth of information and resources that are available through that. So we invite you to join us tomorrow at the same time for that. And with that, I think, Anita, if you would, if there's some final things that you'd like to share with us, this would be a good time for that.
Well, the main thing is, from my point of view, I guess at the top of the list of preparedness is your spiritual basis. I think for me, I couldn't really do anything without my belief and my faith in God and his son Jesus, and I have to remember that we're not alone, and he will be our guide. So that's my point of view, and it makes all this thinking about all these things a lot easier, knowing that I'm not the one in charge. Thank goodness. So that's my final thought.
Great. Well, I really appreciate that. I thank you for taking the time again to be with us. And incidentally, folks, Anita was with us, I don't know, it must have been a few months ago. And if you will go to republicmagazine.com/webinar, you'll find, you'll find that if you'll scroll down a bit, you'll find that she was with us in the past, and her replay is there for that as well, because she shared good information at that time a lot, just as well as today. And we invite you to, like I said, share the information with others on the different webinars that we have there. And I thank you again, Anita. Thank you, everyone, for being with us today, and we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good rest of the day. Take care. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.